You're listening to The Rubber Chickens Unleashed.
Hello, Gamecock Nation, and welcome to TRC Unleashed. This is episode number 64. I am your host, Buck, and you're lucky I'm here because an NBA team wanted to interview me 3 years ago, but my loyalties are with you. I am joined, as always, by T-Bone and the G-Man, who had no such interview opportunities, but I let them tag along anyway. And in just a few minutes, we're going to play for you an interview we had with USC head volleyball coach Scott Swanson. Very enlightening, very good interview. I'll tell you, good guy, and we
sounds
really
like a super guy.
Yeah,
super
guy. Absolutely. He was just a pleasure to interview. But we're going to talk a little bit about this big weekend Gamecock sports. Somebody put on Twitter if there's ever been like a better 4 or 5 day stretch in Gamecock sports history. And I don't know, you know, the women's basketball team wins the SEC, the baseball team sweeps Clemson, and the basketball team upsets number 17 Kentucky, the equestrian team, the Horsecocks beat Auburn, who was the number 2 ranked team in the country. Is an equestrian? Yeah, I guess it is a team, an equestrian team.
Yeah, it's a team.
Yeah. So let's talk about baseball first. Going up against Clemson, ranked 11th, and Friday night starts off kind of rough. We fall behind 6-1, and I'm watching the game online and just kind of walked away. I can't. Baseball in particular, I have a really hard time when you're down by a lot of runs being patient with pitch after pitch after, you know, it's hard when you're down and you're really not making any progress. It's hard to watch. So when I saw that we'd loaded the bases and Griner was coming up, I decided to watch some more, and that was good timing on my part. So the Gamecocks came back and won that one. You didn't go to that game, did you, G-Man? No, you didn't. You were celebrating T-Bone's birthday.
That's right.
Weren't you? That's right. I was hanging with T-Bone, checking Twitter.
Right. I was sending you guys Twitter updates. That's right. Saturday, Clemson falls apart. Four errors on Friday, four errors on Saturday. They fall apart, lose 10-2. And then yesterday was just, man, talk about a cherry on top to a weekend, being down 3-1 and having a four-run rally in the top of the ninth to win on their field was just fantastic.
And just ripped their hearts out.
Right.
You know, it really did.
Yeah.
That was just the best part of that, because I listened to pretty much the whole game. I went to my office to get some work done. So I did about half work, half listened to the game. But I stayed with it. I listened to the whole game. And even the ninth inning, I didn't turn it off. And the most gratifying part of the whole thing was the fact that their fans seemed to get so excited. I mean, they had the clap going. They were on their feet. You know, they were all fired up. They had two strikes on a couple of our batters. And then just to rip their hearts out. I mean, that was just the best part to me.
Well, if you remember, it was almost a carbon. Go ahead.
Say the reason it was so sweet is because they had started the rationalizations already. I mean, you could see them on Twitter. You know, I got a couple of buddies that were texting me, you know, why can't the Gamecocks win and Doug Kinsmore? What's wrong with the Gamecocks? You know, this little Jedi mind trick that the Tigers do, where whatever accidental thing they happen to be good at is the only valid measuring stick of their program. So they were already going down that road, and then it just fell apart. It just, like sand through their fingers, it eroded away.
Well, and I even tweeted this. This was it appeared to be a carbon copy of 2012 when we won the first two games, and on Sunday we played at Clemson and lost on a either bottom of the ninth, bottom of the 10th, game-winning hit, and they celebrated like they had won the World Cup and the Super Bowl and the World Series all rolled into one. And I was like, okay, guys, watch this. They're going to do it again. They're going to, you know, and this will be the only game that matters. You know,
right, the third will be the only one. Exactly.
And then, I don't know, I didn't get a chance to listen to any upstate radio today. I don't know if you guys did, but I can imagine it was tough.
I listened to quite a bit of it today.
Did you really?
As a matter of fact, yes. I had to spend a great deal of time in the car, and so I considered all of my listening options, and I went with 104.9.
Yeah.
The original, right out of the gate with Mickey Plyler, he spent, I don't know, 20 minutes talking about ACC basketball tiebreak scenarios for the fifth seed. I'm not exaggerating. He's like, it's very important to be the fifth seed and not the sixth seed. And then he actually just kind of acknowledged the elephant in the room, and he said, for the rest of the day, I want to give you tips on how to avoid the Gamecocks in your life. And so he talked about take a bottle of water to work so you don't have to go to the water cooler, you know.
Right.
Those
right.
kind of things. So they admitted it. But a lot of gnashing of teeth up here, a lot of gnashing. Little stat I did not know. Out of the last 31 times South Carolina and Clemson have played in baseball, do you know how many South Carolina has won?
It's something 23. Like 22, 23.
23. 23. Yeah. 23 out of 31. Now, I guess Dabo would still say if we played 50 times, they'd win 25 of them. But they're going to have to really, really go on a roll at this point.
Yeah. So, you know, this is a really impressive South Carolina baseball team. You know, that's a good Clemson team that we beat. As much as we love to bash Clemson, that's a strong baseball team. You know, I got a good news, bad news for South Carolina. And I don't know if it's bad news or just a concern of mine, because I have to have something to be concerned about. It's just my nature. The good news is, you know, at the end of the day yesterday, when Bryson Celek and Marcus Mooney and Tanner English came up, I did not feel terribly comfortable about any one of those three guys getting a hit. And they all three got a hit. Those aren't guys. I mean, we don't know Mooney well enough. Celek we know well enough to think he could have easily struck out in that situation. Tanner English we know well. Tanner English is a man, he's a feast or famine, seems to be. And it was really great to see the bottom of the order come through with those clutch hits, which makes you feel good about, you know, what we have 1 through 9 in the lineup. On the bad side, or the of concern side, and I will refer to a tweet from friend of the show, John Michael Gunnels, at jgunnels27. He says, could Mincy, Seddon, Fiore, Reagan, and Beal make our deepest bullpen in recent memory? Well, we only threw 6 guys all weekend in those 3 games. We had our 3 starters and Mincy, Seddon, and Fiore. So where he got Reagan and Beal from, I don't know. And on Saturday, when Holbrook brought in Seddon to start the set, or I think Wine Coop had faced one batter in the 7th, and he brings Seddon in. I thought, he really wants to win this game very badly, and he doesn't have confidence in anybody else. You know, he's going to ride Seddon for all 3 innings. So I get a little concerned that he didn't have enough confidence to bring in one of these other guys, and I wonder if that's going to be the pattern of the pitching staff. We got to find 2 or 3 other guys we could count on out of the bullpen.
Yeah, but it's early in the season.
I know. Yeah,
and he's going with his guys. He wanted to win that series. He wanted to win it for the fans and in the rankings. And he's going with the guys who are the most, able to get it done that he's seen in the preseason. I mean, Seddon's a veteran. He's been around for 3 years. Mincy, I mean, you know, he's a new guy. I think we got some arms down there. Beal's a little bit injured right now. But I'll tell you what's encouraging is you're 10-0. You swept Clemson, and Joey Pancake and Max Schrock are, like, have the 2 lowest batting averages on the team, or 2 best hitters.
Right.
Okay? are kind of scuffling right now. So it just shows you that that's a very good team, a deep lineup, three studs at the top of the rotation, obviously two good relievers at the back of the rotation or at the back of the pitching staff. So, I mean, they're here to stay. You know, they're not going to go undefeated. We're going to lose some games, but that's a solid baseball team.
T-Bone, are you pouring another scotch? What is all that noise in the background?
I assumed it was coming from your end. It sounds like somebody loading a dryer or something to me.
That must be G-Man then.
I had to move to a different part of the house for connection purposes, and there's background noise, so just deal with it.
Can't control his family. All right, a couple of baseball questions before we get to our interview with Scott Swanson. At Beat Clem says, you know what? He asked this after football, and he's expecting an answer, and this is a specific answer. I think this is going over my head. He says, what do you think Jack Leggett's favorite color is? Because he asked us what we thought Dabo's favorite color was after we beat them in football. So I don't – Beat Clem, I think you're looking for something specific, and we're whiffing on this one. Totally. So you guys have no thoughts on that at all?
No, I'm trying to think of something witty and snarky to say. But
I couldn't think of anything either.
Yeah. I mean, we beat them. We swept them. So I don't know.
He also wants to know whose garage they use for WCCP broadcasts, which is, I don't know, we could probably just, do they have garages in Clemson?
Yeah, they do.
Or carports?
No, they have barns.
They
keep everything in the barn.
I got another baseball comment when you get a minute, when you finish with your questions there.
when you finish unloading the dryer, would you come back to me?
I'll try to put a stop to that, but anyway, keep going. I got a baseball comment in a minute.
So Ben Black at WandoCock says, why wasn't Leggett tossed, and why doesn't the media mention what he did? And that's obviously referring to what happened on Saturday with the play at home plate, and then supposedly Mooney went into third spikes high, which his spikes were pretty low from what I could tell. But you know Ben, I think there was just a lot of confusion on that play. I think Leggett came out, and when Leggett and Oki were arguing with the umpires, everybody assumed there was a timeout, and then Oki throws down to third to get the out. And I don't really think the umpires knew what to do with the situation at that point, except for get everybody off the field, say that's the third out. You know, kind of reminds me of the scene in The Naked Gun, you know, where they're throwing the ball around, but. I didn't hear any of the media today, so I don't know if it got brought up or not.
Well, it was 10-2. I don't think people really cared at that point.
Right. But the other thing you got going on there is to, I guess, mix sporting metaphors a little bit. Jack Leggett has a war chest of classiness to tap into. So they assume that he's doing something classy.
Right, right.
Right.
All right, G-Man, go with your comment before we get to the last question, because I really love the last question that we got.
Well, I just wanted to comment on some of the things I've seen on Twitter the last couple of days about how, you know, it's along the theme of the football game where, you know, they gave us the game with the turnovers, and now they've given us the game, especially the game on Saturday. They gave us that game with errors. And excuse me, but when did baseball cease being a game where you had to play defense to win? And when was playing defense not considered a trait of a good baseball team?
Right.
You know? I mean, we won the College World Series not because we were the best hitting team. It's because we were the most complete team and we played the best defense. Who remembers Scott Wingo, you know, snagging the ball and throwing to home only, and then the double plays we turned. That's why we won the College World Series, because we play good defense.
Right.
And guess what? That wins baseball games. So they want to say that they gave us the game because they didn't play good defense. Excuse me, but that's part of the game, as is not turning the ball over in football. So they can just stop all that. Just nonsense.
So a shorter version of that same comment is scoreboard.
Right.
Just
scoreboard. Well, stop it with the whining.
T-Bone's buddy, Quackenbush, on Friday night said...
or as I like to call him, Towel Bar.
He says, this is not a shot, but Clemson gave that game away. Let me tell you something. There's a handful of things that are just terribly insulting to say about another team or another player, and one of them is we gave that game away. That is saying it's not a shot. That's one of the worst shots you can take. It's a terrible insult to say we gave you the game. You know what? Get better players.
Right.
Get players that don't boot ground balls and misplay fly balls and drop the ball at home on what would be a game-ending play at the plate, all right?
Because the bottom line is all the athletic ability in the world doesn't matter at all if you can't handle the pressure.
Right.
If you can't take the pressure, can't take the heat, get out of the kitchen.
All right.
Our guys can handle it. Their guys can't.
So let's lighten things back up here. Kunal Das at QNAL says, tag team wrestling match between the team of Christian Walker and Peter Mooney versus the team of Kyle Martin and Marcus Mooney. Who would win? And I got thoughts on that.
I'm going with Martin and Marcus.
Well, my thoughts are is the Moonies are the same. I'm not convinced they're different people. So I'm just going to say
throw that out.
So Marcus and Peter just cancel each other out. So you got Christian Walker against Kyle Martin. I think Martin's a little taller. You know, might have a reach advantage, but Christian Walker's just
like a Mack truck.
Yeah, he's got more power. You know, Kyle Martin hasn't shown that he has a lot of power yet. He's a great hitter, no doubt. He's a great hitter. I would have to go with Walker and Mooney in that matchup. So that's our baseball chat. And now let's go to an interview we taped with volleyball coach Scott Swanson, and we'll be back in just a few minutes.
Grab a snack and sit back, pull up a chair and relax. The volleyball song was made for you, so we came back with number two. It's a wrap, cause the singing wasn't great, but that's no need for anyone to hate. I spiked the ball straight down the line. Tool OT, whatever gets the point is fine.
All right, on tonight's show, we have a very special guest joining us. He is the University of South Carolina head volleyball coach, Scott Swanson. Coach, thanks for joining us. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Good. Hey, it sounds like in the fall, this will be the fourth season that you've been the head man at South Carolina. Is that correct?
That is right, yep.
So if you wouldn't mind, kind of give us, you know, after being here for 3 years, give us a state of the program. You know, what are some of the goals and challenges for the upcoming season and kind of where you feel like the program is today?
Well, I feel like we're definitely heading in a good direction. We've done a lot of, I guess you want to say, recruiting in advance. Volleyball is kind of a crazy sport in that we'll get sophomores to verbally commit, you know, so we've offered 2016s already, and we're waiting for them to tell us, even as early as next week, if they're going to be a Gamecock. So, when I took the job in 2011, the way volleyball recruiting works, most of the top kids were gone, and so we were looking to 2013 already in our recruiting phase. So, you know, we finally had a chance now to do our own recruiting and get some of the top kids that we feel like are going to give us the best chance to be good in the SEC. And this class coming in 2014 is pretty elite. Two of them are high school All-Americans. One of them was they're both players of the year in their state. They're very polished, good players that we feel like are going to raise the level for us in the gym. And add to that the kids that we've already been training for 2 years. We feel like we're going to have a little bit more experience, a lot more athleticism, and for sure just some more talent. So things are good. They're going in the right direction. We're becoming more competitive. If we can stay healthy, I feel like we're going to begin to make more strides and win more SBC matches this next year or two.
So you lost maybe one of the best players in program history, and I'm going to butcher her last name, but I think it's Juliet Tevena, something
Tevena.
Tevena. Ah, man, I was pretty close. So
you're trying too hard.
too many vowels. But you said you've got the Gatorade Player of the Year coming in from Minnesota. You've got the State 5A Player of the Year coming in from Florida. How do you, you know, the Southeast is not, I'm guessing, necessarily a hotbed for volleyball. So how do you, or for collegiate volleyball, how do you find these kids in Minnesota and in the Northeast and going down to Florida? Because, you know, we talk about football a lot on the show. We talk about basketball, and, you know, nothing against any of the coaches who go out and recruit so hard, but there's so much information out there about football players and basketball players. So how do you go about recruiting for volleyball?
Well, we really don't even recruit out of high school anymore. It's all, you know, obviously all these kids do play high school volleyball, but they play junior club volleyball. So,
right,
you know, they'll go from trying out in November for their club teams to starting their practices by January, and it runs all the way through into the beginning of July. So the club season is actually twice as long as the high school season. They practice 3 days a week. They travel. They play in major national tournaments. And, you know, there's probably 10 or 12 national qualifiers that are held in different cities. Like, there's one in Atlanta. There's one in Denver. There's one in Baltimore. There's one in Kansas City, L.A., and a lot of them are in convention centers. So you walk into these convention centers, and there'll be over 100 volleyball courts set up. And there'll be anywhere from 12 and unders all the way up to 18 and unders playing in these tournaments for a weekend. And we actually have an application that we use on our phones that's a web-based deal, that we get the schedule, and we get every kid that we've tagged, and they all show up on that. So we walk in there at 8 a.m., we see all the kids that we've either had interest from or are interested in, and we go to work, and we watch all weekend. We watch these kids, and a lot of times we're watching them as they're 15 years old, and they, you know, as they progress, then we start to figure out whether we want them or not, and we try to get them to visit. And so it's, for us here at South Carolina, I feel like it's a great advantage that we don't have to limit ourselves where we recruit. We have kids from California, Texas, Minnesota, Atlanta, Florida. It's a place that it doesn't scare anybody to come to South Carolina. I was at Minnesota for 5 years, and you can imagine a warm weather kid from Texas not having a whole lot of interest to go to the cold country.
Right.
But, you know, on the flip side, nobody shies away from sunshine and a beach 2 hours away and the kind of things we have to offer. So, you know, we pretty much, the sky's the limit for where we can recruit. And you are right, you know, the Southeast is not quite as established in the juniors volleyball realm as it is in Texas and in California and in the Midwest, but you know, it's getting better, and we do have a few from the Southeast as well as the rest of the country.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. When I was growing up watching watching volleyball, I grew up in South Carolina. I just saw it as a West Coast sport. You know, volleyball to me was Pepperdine and Southern Cal and UCLA and schools like that, but you went to Arizona State, and then you see a school like Penn State that has become just a powerhouse in volleyball. And at Minnesota, you guys did very well. How does that happen? I think it was Wisconsin. I saw Wisconsin in the Final Four. So, is it coaching? Is it facilities? How does a school like Penn State become a volleyball powerhouse?
Well, I have a couple different theories, I guess, but a lot of it is coaching and who's, you know, like Penn State, for instance, that coach has been there for so long and he's been good for so long that they just keep coming. I mean, they don't rebuild ever. It's reload every single year, and they get the pick of anybody in the East Coast for sure. They're always going to get the top East Coast player, and then there's really no limitations to where they can recruit. It's just, if you want to go have a chance to win a national championship at least once in your 4 years, you go to Penn State if you're that good. So I guess they've just built a tradition. The Big Ten in general is probably the most well-supported for the sport of women's volleyball. They give them great budgets. They have great fan bases. They have really nice facilities. They travel well. It means something in the Big Ten. You don't feel like you're a second-class sport when you're playing volleyball in that conference. You know, they're on TV all the time. It's just it's one of those things that the more money you put into it, the better chance you have of being good, to be honest.
Yeah.
And that's what they've done.
And I guess being in, especially when you look at the winter we've had this year, being an indoor sport probably doesn't hurt too bad either.
Yeah, that's a huge part of it in the Midwest. I feel like, you know, if you grow up a boy, you're probably playing hockey, and grow up, most girls are playing volleyball, and they don't spend a whole lot of time outside. Even if they play softball or baseball, they're usually training in a field house.
Yeah.
So it's a little different, and that's what makes the fan base even better too, because there's less to do outside. You go watch a sport that's exciting, and it's indoors and warm. So it's just kind of a tradition, especially in a state like Minnesota where it's so cold for so long.
Right.
People are just into volleyball. It's huge.
So what do you sell the kids on with South Carolina? You talked about the warm weather, being able to stay in the warm weather and come here. You know, I've seen the facility online on Gamecocks Online. The facility is fantastic. How do you convince a kid to come to South Carolina?
Well, you know, it's one of those things where there's never been a better time to be at South Carolina because of the success of all of our other sports and the new academic enrichment program and the new Rice building and, you know, all the facilities that they've put up in Athletics Village, including most recently the sand volleyball courts. It's a program on the rise, you know, and right now I think we have four teams ranked in the top five in the country, or the top 10 in the country. Just beat Kentucky in basketball. I mean, a lot of it, to be honest, it comes down to like national exposure through Twitter and television and bowl games. And, you know, I know we were trending two nights ago when we beat Kentucky. We were like the third most popular tweet in going on Twitter.
Right.
And that's where all these kids spend their time. And so I got to think that helps volleyball get more attention when they get a letter from us, because they've already heard of South Carolina. And, you know, it's, I really feel like the SEC is an easy sell, especially if you get them here on a football weekend and they see what a phenomenon that is. You can't really match that anywhere else.
And right.
It's for us, the biggest challenge is just, we're recruiting someone from California or the Midwest. They have to, the way recruiting is going on right now is they basically have to come on their own dime on an unofficial visit to see campus. We don't do it like football and basketball where we wait until we're able to pay for their visit. It's accelerated that much where you're kind of limited to who you can get on your campus when they have a weekend free and they can afford to do it.
Right. So talk about, you know, you got to be proud of the academic successes. When I was looking online today, I saw a lot of academic All-Americans or SEC honor rolls, or, I mean, that's got to be a source of pride for you.
Oh, it's huge. And that's kind of the culture that we want, you know, our program to be known for, is we have mostly top students coming out of high school. Not only are they good volleyball players, but they're serious about school, and they go to class, and they already know what they want to, for the most part, what they want to major in, and they're, you know, they're not looking at, oh, I'm going to go play pro after I get done with college volleyball. They're looking at, I'm going to go into a serious career or do the best I can so I can get my master's, get into the master's program I want. And you know, since I've been here, we've gone from about a 3.4 to last year we were over a 3.6 of the program, which is the highest in the department. And just overall, because of the academic support, and I think just the culture that, you know, the administration before built and that Coach Tanner is building on, it's cool to be on the honor roll, on the SEC honor roll. And I think we've led the conference at least the past 4 years as far as the most student athletes on that list. So volleyball does their part there, and you know, we're big in community service too. So it's more about being a well-rounded student athlete than just a jock that practices and plays all the time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's outstanding. I'm glad you said that too, because T-Bone has just tried to convince us for years that a 2.5 was the best you could do.
Hey, it's all I need.
Degree.
All right, G-Man, I think you had a question.
Yeah, hey, Coach, I just want to know kind of what it's like now being a part. You touched on it a couple minutes ago about the momentum at the university right now with the sports programs, the women's basketball team obviously winning the SEC, the football program doing so well, of course the baseball team with a great past few years, and of course sweeping Clemson this weekend was outstanding. I mean, what is it like in the athletic department these days, and just give us sort of a feel for obviously the momentum that's going on and how we capitalize on that going forward in other sports.
I think it's kind of an electric feeling. I really do. I think everybody is so excited and so supportive of each other. I was having a conversation with some of my girls at the end of the year meetings that we have with them, and one of them brought up that sometimes, you know, they go in the dining hall and they're friends with some of the soccer players, and the soccer players, they won an SEC title this year. And it was funny to hear the players. They were kind of like, yeah, we're getting a little, I don't know, not jealous, but it's just hard to listen to them talk about that ring.
Right.
And, I think it's really motivating kids from other sports that have not had as much success to say, hey, maybe we need to put in the extra work, the extra hours. Maybe we need to see why soccer and basketball and baseball are as successful as they are, and we need to emulate that. So it's like a source of pride to be able to be in that same conversation, you know, and hey, we're going to go to the NCAA tournament. That's a big deal for us and for our kids. That's something that we're trying to get them to invest into. That's a huge goal for them, is to be a team that gets chosen to go to the NCAA tournament, because that means you're being nationally considered as a legitimate program, and you know, and that's, to be honest, it's not the pinnacle, but that's a good start in showing people that you're serious about what you're doing. So
yeah,
I'm excited that that's the way they're thinking, because that's what the coaches want.
So, you know, you're in an athletic department with Steve Spurrier and Dawn Staley and Frank Martin. Do you guys have like a coach's retreat or anything? Do you get to hang out with these other coaches very much, or, you know, have lunch with them, or how much do you interact?
I do get to see them. Not as much the football staff, because they're pretty far away over at Williams-Brice, but we share a building with men's and women's basketball. So I see Don and Frank on a daily basis. Actually, I had a meeting with them today and with Coach Tanner about some facility upgrades that we're all excited about. And, you know, it's just, it's amazing to be around those types of people who have had so much success. And you can learn a lot just from listening to them and watching how they carry themselves and how they deal with their kids and with their staff. And for me, it's a privilege to be able to hopefully kind of have some of that stuff rub off, because they're truly nationally known. They're pretty much celebrity coaches, and they do an unbelievable job. So I feel pretty lucky to be on the same, you know, in the same athletic department as all those guys, and to be able to learn from them. And you know, it's pretty cool when they retweet, you know, when they retweet something that you put out on Twitter, and you look at, you know, Frank Martin's got like 40,000 followers.
Right.
So it's pretty neat.
Well, I'm glad you brought up Ray Tanner. You know, we had a lot of conversations on this show when there was an opening for the athletics director position, and you know, whether Ray Tanner was ready, whether he had the experience, and you know, he almost immediately got the job, and I think he has, at least so far from what we've seen, proven to be a great choice. He seems to be very popular, not only among the fans, but for everybody that works for him too.
He's unbelievable. I mean, the thing is he's coming straight off being a coach, and being a coach at that school, you know, is such an advantage, because he knows exactly what everybody's going through. He knows what it's like to build, and he knows what it's like to have a lot of success, and he knows what it's like or, and what a new facility can do for you. So he flat out tells everybody, we have some people that don't have what they need to be as successful as we want them to be, and that's our goal, is to work on that. You know, and it, he speaks from the coach's shoes and knows how to, knows the problems that we sometimes face and the challenges and the stresses and the dealing with the balance of family life and all that. And so I think we all appreciate the fact that he's been in our shoes and that he is fully supporting us and trying to help us be as successful as we can. So it's I think it's a huge advantage.
Right.
That,
right.
That hire was, there could have been no better hire.
Yeah, you know what I think is so cool about it? I know he's an NC State guy, but he's been here long enough to where, you know, he's one of us. You know, he's right. we didn't go hire from the outside, we hired from within, and he's one of us, and I think that means a lot to the fans and to the programs that he supports.
Yeah. I agree, and it's I don't know. It's a privilege to hear him talk. He's got a lot of stories and a lot of motivational things that he shares, and you know, even Coach Holbrook obviously learned a lot from Coach Tanner, and is you know, not even skipping a beat, it seems like. So it's a lot of things have been established, and I think it's just going to keep getting better and better because of what he's bringing to the table as far as fundraising. And he's admittedly not very patient about, hey, we need this new facility built, let's go, you know, let's get
right,
the money raised,
right,
and let's get ground broken. And you know, it's that kind of person, that kind of competitive person that you need in charge to be good.
Right.
Where I think we're at.
So we know you don't coach the sand volleyball team, but there seems to be a lot of energy around those guys getting started next weekend, and Coach Moritz. One of the questions I have is, not knowing the rosters very well, is there crossover from your team and the sand volleyball team?
Yeah, there is.
Okay.
We have six of our indoor players are also playing sand volleyball, and that could fluctuate any given year. I would almost guess that next year is going to be a little larger number because we had some kids that were hurt this
right.
year that didn't play sand because of their injury. So I would say anywhere between six and nine would be playing again next spring, 2015. But yeah, right now we currently have six.
All right, Coach. Well, we thank you so much for taking the time. It's really very interesting to hear about the volleyball program, and you know, we'll be very excited in the fall when you guys tip back off again. And you know, I'm curious, how do we get, you know, we're adults and we all have jobs, and I'm not asking for any freebies here, but how do we get Gamecock volleyball swag? You know, how do we get some long sleeve shirts and things like that? Do you guys sell any of that stuff?
You just got to know the right people, man. I can hook you up.
All right. We'll direct message you on Twitter then about that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, I appreciate you guys having me on. And anytime you want to come to a match, just shoot me an email. We'll get you on the list. And yeah, you can shoot me your sizes too.
Yeah, absolutely. We'd love to do it. All right. That's Coach Scott Swanson of the University of South Carolina volleyball team. Thanks again for joining us.
Whatever. Thank you.
That didn't even make sense. Watch your foot when you're trying to spin. Foot faults are very disappointing. And another thing, tie up your shoestrings and make sure there is nothing you're forgetting.
All right, that was USC head volleyball coach Scott Swanson. Thanks again for joining us. And so let's get back to some of the weekend festivities. Basketball games. G-Man, I guess you didn't go to that either. The win over Kentucky.
I have been asked this question about six times, and I've gone to almost all the home basketball games this year. There's circumstances that made it impossible for me to be there. I deeply regret it, but no,
I was not there.
Yes.
You can never go to another home basketball game.
I'm actually going tomorrow night to see us take on number one Florida.
There you go.
And I'm pretty excited about it. I got invited to go to the Frank McGuire room before the game. So I'm
excited. Oh, excuse me.
Exactly.
Wow.
But an aristocrat.
I did not go to the game, but I did watch every minute of it on TV.
I didn't because I don't have cable TV anymore, but I listened to Andy D's call of the ball game, which was good. That was a lot of fun. And again, not a program changing victory, but as TRC tweeted out, just remember that date. Just remember March 1st, 2014. It's kind of the first glimmer of hope. You know, obviously the biggest win of the Martin era. This is not a great Kentucky team, but it's still a top 20 Kentucky team, and they still have Kentucky across the front of their uniform. So nice win for the Hoopsters.
Yeah, it gives them some candy, recharges the batteries, so those guys feel like they're working for something, because you know it's got to get hard when there's no payoff.
Right. You want to get that?
That's awesome.
It's off. thing about that game, though, is what they needed, especially Thornwell. The guy needed to win. He's been working so hard.
Yeah.
And the guy's like playing five positions at the same time. I mean, it's pretty amazing. He brings the ball up. He distributes the ball. He works his way into the offense. Then most of the time he ends up with the ball back, and he's expected to create a shot.
Right.
You know, I mean, he's doing everything. And Brent Williams is helping him out. But the rest of the guys, really, I mean, they're just out there, I don't know, filling roles. I mean, it's Thornwell and Williams and whoever else we happen to cobble together on the court right now. And Thornwell's the real deal, and we needed that win for him just to keep his spirits up, because the guy, I mean, I think he played every minute of the game.
Yeah.
I mean, he might have been out for 2 minutes or something like that.
And I felt really good for Williams, too, because he's had, I wouldn't say a miserable career at South Carolina, but there haven't been a lot of bright spots. I mean, he individually has had a lot of bright spots, a lot of, you know, 20-plus point games. I think he had a 38-point game last year. But there wasn't any kind of a real signature win for him. And you like to see somebody who's given that much to a program have a win like that, have a memory like that. And, you know, the Gamecocks Online has had been running a picture of him being carried off on students' shoulders. So that felt really good for Brenton Williams. The women are the SEC champs. And I tell you what, I was thinking about this the other day. We lost to Tennessee on Sunday, the women did. But I'm thinking with Pat Summitt's health issues, Tennessee may not quite be Tennessee in the coming years. This is a good time for Dawn Staley in South Carolina to kind of take over as that powerhouse program in the SEC. And with the recruiting class they've got coming in next year, if they can add Asia Dozier to that, they'll have the number one class in the country in addition to everything they've got coming back next year. I think they've got one senior.
Yeah, one senior. I don't think she plays.
Right. So that's going to be an outstanding program for a long time to come. They actually play in the SEC women's basketball tournament in Duluth, Georgia, starting on Friday. So I'm going to I'm thinking about riding over there maybe Saturday or Sunday and seeing them play.
You should do that. You know they had 12,000 fans at the last home game. 12,000 fans. I mean, amazing turnout for that program.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm wondering next year where they're going to put all these people. I mean, they got these great recruits coming in, no seniors, and they already have a pretty deep team. I mean, we might have to have like 8 people on the court at once or something like that.
Yeah, Phil Louse. And no, I realize that Pat Summitt is not the head coach at Tennessee. She hasn't been for the last 2 years, but I still think with her being gone, Staley can maybe step into that role as the premier coach in the SEC. So I'm getting texts from T-Bone and the G-Man as I try to move along here. But thank you for helping me clarify. So,
man, we were going to do it like totally under the radar, not to embarrass you.
Exactly. Yeah,
right.
That's what
right.
texting is all about. But yeah. No.
Okay. Texting is all about discretion. So football practice starts, is it tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
So, hey, yeah, T-Bone is going to publish a comprehensive guide to Gamecock spring football practice.
If it can be done in like one Venn diagram, yes, I will.
So, yeah, we haven't published a lot of written material on the blog lately. So
it's the off season.
Hey, but the big story that came out today is Ronnie Martin transferring.
I know. Like we could stand for another cornerback to
right. Second biggest story there is that we apparently had a player on our team named Ronnie Martin. Martin.
Right. Yeah, I was gonna say that surprised you that he transferred. I mean, come on.
Oh yeah. He was supposed to step right in and play last year. From what everybody told me.
Yeah. Now, he was hurt and then never caught on. I mean, that handwriting's been on the wall for quite some time.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why we went out and signed like 15 cornerbacks in the class.
So I don't know what good – spring practice does the players a lot of good. I think for us to really take anything meaningful away, I mean, what is there anything you're looking forward to?
Go ahead. You first.
No, I was going to say one thing you can't do is you can't get excited about our wide receivers now because they're going to be playing against the air all spring. You know, there's going to be nobody covering them.
Right.
So, you know, just temper your expectations. We don't have to beat anybody in the spring. So.
Yeah, if Shaq Rowland has seven catches for seven touchdowns and 300 yards in a scrimmage, then just understand who he's playing against.
Just chill. Nobody, right. He's doing that against Rico.
Yeah. I guess I'm interested to see what happens with the backup quarterback spot because old Nasi, he seems to be getting a little love lately through social media channels. I read somewhere he's had a really good off season working out, and I think people pretty much assumed the backup job was going to belong to Connor Mitch once Connor Shaw left, but may not be so easy.
Maybe not. I like the fact that he's a running quarterback. And
what? G-Man just had an answer.
Out of what?
I'm sorry.
Aneurysm.
I just couldn't get by you. What I'm looking for.
Well, I had a little something going on there, but I'll start over. I like the fact that he's a running quarterback.
Yeah.
And that gives us another dimension. I'm kind of hoping he gets the backup job just so we can have a little change of pace like we've had in the past.
If I dare say, he's Tebow-esque.
Tebow-esque.
Testing.
I got you.
1-2.
I got you.
Yeah.
Big call.
Yeah. So, but fall practice will be great because we've got a lot of new guys coming
in. The other thing we got to worry about, though, is I'm no expert on scholarship numbers, but I've seen people throwing things around like 88, 89.
Yeah,
we've got two or three more at least that will part ways with us between now and the end of spring practice.
Right.
So don't be shocked if a wide receiver or two, maybe an offensive lineman or a defensive end float away.
Right. Well, and the spring game is April 12th. That's Saturday of the Masters. And as of right now, all three members of TRC are planning to be there. So we'll send out some information. Maybe we could, set up an autograph session or something like that.
Right.
If we can find somebody that's willing to hang out with us that is worthy of an autograph. So, looking forward to that. I haven't been to a spring game in many years. I know you guys went last year and said it was horrible, so I don't know why you want to go back. But, hey, I'm in. We can tailgate and have some fun. We talked a little bit about sand volleyball. And we got just a slew of sand volleyball questions on Twitter today. Kyle at KB09 Gamecock says, does the sand volleyball team need ball boys? If so, is 27 too old to be considered a ball boy? Asking for a friend. So, Kyle, I don't know. We'll try to find that out for you. John Michael Gunnell says, can we get an in-depth preview of the sand volleyball team? Yes, you can if you go to GamecocksOnline.com. Layla says,
or ask the other guy.
Right,
apparently is following them closely.
Layla says, can she volunteer as the sand volleyball insider since she won't creep out the players? I think that's implying that we would creep out the players if we actually covered them very closely. Do you see it?
Right. No, I think that's implied in the comment.
Y'all are leaving like way too much dead air in this episode. It's just.
There's no flow
whatsoever to this episode, but people are going to listen anyway for some reason. And Layla also wants to know if there's a men's team. No, but maybe the three of us would consider putting together a seniors team and wearing really tight outfits and playing sand volleyball. Why don't they call it beach volleyball? That's what I should have asked. That's what I should have asked Coach, is why do they call it sand volleyball and not beach volleyball?
Maybe because we're not at the beach.
Because we're not on a beach. But it's always been beach volleyball, whether you're on a beach or not. Anyway.
I think they should call it soft volleyball as opposed to hard volleyball.
Because the floor is soft instead of hard?
Right. And it'd be just so much more fun to say.
Soft volleyball.
Right. Well, I can't even say it out. You know, we could do a whole horse.
Move on. Moving on.
Well, what else is going on out there in Gamecock land? That's really all I've got.
Let's not let this podcast wrap up without underscoring the coolest college president out there today.
Oh, Pastides?
Pastides really brought his A game over the weekend.
he said that's the best money he's ever spent. That was awesome. That was pretty awesome. Mike Slive probably didn't appreciate that too much, right. but for those of you listening who missed it, the president of the university actually tweeted out that, you know, he didn't want to be fined $25,000, but you know, once he realized he wasn't going to be able to stop it, he wanted to get every dollar's worth, so he ran out there too. I also wanted to touch on the Demetra situation of the last couple of days. Have y'all been keeping up with that?
Let's touch on the Demetra situation for the past 4 years while we're doing it.
So, did you see what he has done today, or over the weekend? Teddy Hefner just blasted him. I mean, blasted him. I think it was Sunday, said he tweeted at Gamecock Radio. You know, I listened to at Gamecock Radio, and it was awful. You know, some of the worst play-by-play I've ever heard, blah, 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 blah. So Demetra tweeted, like, to four different people who defended him, you know, thanks, that NBA team that wanted to interview me 3 years ago, you know, must have had a high opinion of me or something along those lines.
The job I didn't get. You know.
Right, and that was like, okay, so does that mean, you know, something happened there? Either you didn't interview, or you did interview and didn't get the job, or, you know, why would you not interview for an NBA job if he didn't interview? Isn't that better
there's no logical answer to that question.
Right. And I think it was the NBA team's TV job.
Right.
So that's better than being the basketball and baseball guy at the University of South Carolina. NBA.
We're assuming that it was for on-air talent. Maybe he was going to intern, bring somebody coffee. I think he'd be perfect for that.
Well, at Sports Talk SC asked if he interviewed to be a ball boy.
Right, exactly. There you go.
So, yeah, Sports Talk piled on. It got ugly there for a little bit. And
hey, Demetra, if you're listening, and I know you're not, but if you are.
All right, I'm listening there, T-Bone.
Yeah, if you get a nibble, just a nibble, man, I feel like you owe it to yourself to go see if there's anything there.
Please go.
You know, if Please it's something go. In something in Nashville or, you know, Memphis or whatever, you owe it to yourself to go check it out.
And, you know, I'm pretty sure we have people who listen to this show who like Demetra, and that's fine. I don't begrudge anybody who does. We just don't. We happen to not like him, but just
And if people think we're just hating on him, the reason we're frustrated with Demetra is because he seems insincere.
Right.
Nothing he does seems genuine. And
right.
You can just feel it. You can feel it every step of the way. And that's not a slam on his ability as a broadcaster or anything else. He just doesn't feel like our guy.
It's all fabricated.
Yeah.
So
kiss the ring, baby. Kiss the ring.
I miss Morgan.
Kiss the rings.
I miss Morgan.
I miss Mike Morgan.
Miss him.
Hell, I miss Charlie Mack compared to Demetra.
Yeah, that's saying something.
Yeah.
Oh, that is saying something. But Morgan was the guy. He'll always be the guy. But anyway.
Yeah. All right. Well, you know, this was about as disjointed. Besides the interview with our head volleyball coach Scott Swanson, this has been a very disjointed show. But you know, we only do this once a month. So what do you want from us? You know,
right?
Go listen.
Yeah, we covered a lot of ground though. For shows that we do, we covered lots of topics. So you can accept a little bit of I don't know. unusual ebb and flow.
Incongruity.
Yes, nice word, T-Bone. But we covered a lot, Tom. I mean, what did we cover? We covered equestrian. We covered women's volleyball, women's basketball, football, men's basketball. I mean, pastides. I mean, come on.
We're the only podcast that covers this kind of ground. I mean, I really think that's
exactly.
You know, have you seen the Halfcock Show is now doing live shows?
Yeah, they're doing one right now,
like four nights a week.
Yep, they're doing one right now. And to Twitter.
I'm like, dude, more power to you.
Live shows four nights a week.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
What do you talk about all this time?
Do you know what? When I hang up, I'm going to call in.
You should.
See what's going on with those guys. All right, cool deal. Well,
do you want me to try to play the Halfcock live show into the mic right now?
No.
Okay.
We don't need to screw this thing up any more than we already have. So, you know, we'll end this the only way we know how. It has now been 1,921 days since South Carolina lost to Clemson in football. I am Buck for the RubberChickensBlog.com, and we will talk to you very soon.